Port of Houston Authority. I'm going to call the meeting to order. It's 9:15 a.m. We're in our conference room here in Houston. Quickly on opening remarks, I have a couple of really interesting observations, at least I think they are, in the sense that last week and this week is spring break for a lot of people. And at my age now, I'm having spring break with my grandkids, since my kids are definitely full grown and have a lot of kids. And so we went to Fort Lauderdale last week. We spent the week on the beach in Fort Lauderdale, and I had the opportunity to visit Port Everglades. And it was really an interesting juxtaposition between Houston and Port Houston and Port Everglades. They do about, just for information wise, they do about 1.1 million TEUs annually at Port Everglades, and they do almost 4 million people in cruise ships that go through their cycle. And when we went into the channel, their channel is about 300 yards, maybe 400 yards long before you get through the breakwater. And then the ocean, when you get out about a mile, is 400 feet, 2 miles, 400 feet deep. So compared to our 52-mile channel, I talked to Captain Thompson earlier, and they have about 10 pilots. We have 93 pilots right now, plus or minus. And when you think about the challenges that we have in our channel, the 52 miles of 530 feet wide and 45 foot deep up to where the channel gets a little tighter. You talk about a complicated journey and an amazing opportunity for economic benefit for our city. Everything I read about Port Everglades was how it was a major economic generator for the Fort Lauderdale area. And I'm just amazed that we have the most complicated channel in America and still do the great job that we do with all the people that support that, from the pilots to the Coast Guard to our seafarers, and then all of our Port Houston people that work on the docks every day, the ILA. It's just amazing to think about the complexity and the complication that we bring to the table every single day, and creating value for everybody in the region. So I just thought it was really interesting when you sort of go somewhere and you see how simple it is for them and how complicated it is for us, and then what we do to achieve the benefits that we create for everybody in the region. So with that, commissioners, any questions or comments that anybody has they want to bring up now?
No, Mr. Chairman, I would like to say I think I forgot to do it last month, but I don't know if everybody's aware that Roger was nominated for the Maritime of the Man, which is a big situation, not only for him, but it puts the Port of Houston on the map as big players, as far as I'm concerned, because this honor he's receiving is in New York, where everything happens in the maritime business. And I think that's a great honor for him and the port.
Absolutely.
Mr. Port, thank you. You're out of luck, because he sold out in 2-3 months ahead of time.
Uh-oh. I think he might have bought 5 or 6.
You think? Great. One thing I did that I wanted to mention, too, is that March is Women's History Month.
Right.
And I want to acknowledge our two women on our board who create value for everyone every single day with their great insight. You know, men and women think differently, and when you think about what women bring to the table, they bring a lot to the table. And when you have a diversity of opinion, a diversity of life experiences, you create better decisions, and there's a lot of study on in the S&P 500 and other sort of Wall Street deals that say the more women on the board, the more profitable the company is, and the better sort of return is. So we appreciate this being Women's History Month, and thank you for serving on the board.
Thank you.
Let's give a hand.
Yay!
And I'd like to thank all the women leaders of the board.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Okay, the next item on the agenda is the approval of the minutes.
Motion. Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Okay, staff reports, Roger.
Hey, buddy. Yes, good morning, everybody. Glad we're here together in person again today. Pleased to share with you some operational activities that reflect what is continuing to be a tremendously active flow of cargo across our docks at Port Houston. We're seeing a substantial demand at our multi-purpose facilities, our general cargo and break bulk. The windows are open, you can see, I'm sure you already have, ship at every dock still. And, you know, that volume continues to drive. I think we're going to, again, have more than a half a million tons of cargo across our docks in March, which is already our steel across our docks in March. You know, the tonnage at these public facilities is more than 2.5 times the first 2 months of last year here at the Turner Basin. 1.3 million tons of cargo versus a little over 500,000 during the first 2 months of last year. So that's kind of the sign of the activity that we're seeing. A lot of cargo, a lot of jobs, a lot of economic activity for our region. The demand on the container trade side is continues to be through the roof at a record level. Our overall container volume for the first 2 months of this year is 30% more than the first 2 months of last year to begin 2022. The loads are up 15%. The loaded imports and exports, which means the empty container volume is up tremendously. So a lot of empty containers going back to Asia to be filled with imported goods because the demand continues to be so high, you know, to return as retail goods coming back. And this trend is expected to continue from what we hear from our shippers and ocean carriers at least through the end of this year. So high demand, which quite frankly, we've talked about it before. I'd say we're not immune to the challenges. It places challenges that our teams are working really hard every day to get outside the box, provide the resources for our users to keep cargo moving efficiently, even at these historic peak levels. If you think about the overall volume of containers being up 30%, and at the same time, our capacity has been cut in half because containers are dwelling twice as long. So that just kind of summarizes the challenges that we're at to keep cargo moving. Our team's doing a great job. You know, we've been looking, we've been investing ahead of the demand curve as the way we knew it before these factors of dwell changed a year or so ago. We're looking at the long term, but we're also, you know, really getting diligent and doubling down on what we can do for tomorrow, the next day to allow for the accommodation of this cargo. So everything's evolving, things change quickly, and we're going to continue to accelerate those investments to do whatever we need to keep freight moving through our port. So stay tuned. We'll continue to keep you up to date about that. And Jeff's going to provide a little more color to that operationally when he gets to his remarks. And just quickly, you know, switching from cargo numbers and the supply chain, just want to share a few thoughts about sustainability. You know, and during our, later in our meeting, Rich may have some color to provide to that, what I'm going to say as well, but also we got a community meeting this afternoon. And the port's already done a lot, already the last couple of years. You know, we've been focusing on the ESG issues, sustainability in general, environmental, social, safety, and governments. But 2021 was kind of a pivotal year moving past and forward on some of these environmental demands, as well as, you know, the maritime workforce, business equity, DEI, and the things that are very important to have a sustained business to handle the cargo and do the business of the port. So We've delivered results. We'll continue to do that. The plan for 2020 is to ramp that up in the areas where we lead and partner support on opportunities for sustainability. Specifically, continuing the dialogue that we're already having with the rest of the industry. That's why, for example, in a couple of weeks, there's going to be, we're participating and sponsoring the Port of the Future Conference for the third year in a row, discussing ideas with vessel owners and cargo owners and trucking lines and the industry users that aren't our tenants and all of the above, just to see how we make and support practical change for sustainability in our region. And we've been working a lot already, and we've been working with the Environmental Defense Fund and the Healthy Port Coalition, Communities Coalition, and we need that support and those ideas to help us, whether it's through grants or opportunities to achieve our goal as a region, so we'll continue to work with them. But ultimately, you know, zero emissions is the target. You know, we've made commitments to reduce our carbon footprint, and you know, I just want to highlight that today, you know, it's a priority that the commission's placed upon me and the rest of the staff, and we're committed to a net carbon zero by 2050, and we're starting to have, you have to have a pathway to get there that starts at many different levels. How you control in your own footprint with the equipment that you have at your terminals, your tenants, those that use your facility. So it's a step process that we're going to be embarking on to make sure that we are successful in that commitment moving forward. So it's priority and something the staff is all engaged in, and we're going to be working diligently to define that path to net zero carbon footprint by 2050 in the coming year and years to come. So anyway, thank you all for showing up today. And Chairman and Commissioners, that's all I have.
Any questions, Commissioners? Okay. Okay, great. Well, I'll go to appearances. So we have the membership director for the Associated Builders and Contractors here. For us, Michelle Asseltine, did I get that right?
Asseltine.
Well, you know, I'm awful with names. Asseltine, well, come on up here, and if you would like to go to the podium there.
Sure. Phil Brown with Austin Commercial and Daryl Samuels with B. Samuels and Associates are here with me today.
All right. On behalf of the ABC, just want to tell a little story about how we're here. Thank you, Chairman Campo, for the having us, Commissioner Clunin, Commissioner Don Carlos, Executive Director Mr. Gunther. We started this journey about a year ago, maybe a year and a half ago. We met with Commissioner Don Carlos over at the ABC's subsidiary arm, CMEF. For those that don't know what CMEF is, that's our workforce arm. And we just started down this path of diversity and inclusion. And Commissioner Don Carlos gave us a lot of insight on what you guys were doing here at the court. For those that haven't worked here like myself, it was an educational experience. And so then from there, I think we had a conversation with Mr. Gunther. I went home and I was all giddy with my wife that I got to talk to the executive director of the court. I don't know how this just happened, but in 5 minutes we got to know each other and some things that we were trying to do, and we talked. And then from there, we met Commissioner Clunin about your goals, your values, and everything you stood for as an organization. So behind that, then we given a little bit of information about ABC, our big focus starting in 2020 was around diversity and inclusion as well. So we started a committee that's made up of now 80-plus members and probably 14, 15 member companies, which Austin Commercial and D. Samuels and Associates are part of. And so with that, we then turned on to Gilda, and we talked about becoming members and how we can work together, and that's why we're here today. So on behalf of the ABC, we're honored that you guys are members of ABC. We're going to work together to help you with your diversity and inclusion goals. We went through the disparity study. We understand it. A lot of what the expertise that Daryl and I bring to the table and the committee, our best practices around DE&I, especially when it comes to the supply chain and diversity. And so we're going to do all that we can to support you in your efforts and to help you. And of course, from a business perspective, it makes sense. All of our diversity, minority and women-owned businesses need work. But we're going to try to make sure we partner up with support and make sure that we maximize those opportunities. So again, on behalf of the ABC, we bring you a member plaque, and we brought some goodies for Gilda and her team to leave behind. And we're here to answer any questions or anything anybody has. But thank you for having us.
Yeah. Thank you so much for being here today.
We would like a photo. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. How do you get a photo?
I'll get the photo. Other duties as assigned. You gotta take your name tag off.
Right. I learned a lot from y'all. Thank you very, very much for meeting. I appreciate y'all's involvement.
Thank you.
It's gonna be a good partnership.
Thank you.
We don't leave all the time.
Get a picture if you want. Am I getting a picture?
We,
pictures? This is a big deal.
I'm going to take a couple because this is not my full time gig.
Okay. Next, we have Jillian Day, who's the Director of Development for the Houston Zoo. Where's Jillian?
Oh, you're online.
Great. Okay, so.
I'm actually on the phone. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can. Perfect. Go ahead.
Wonderful. I'm going to go ahead and introduce my boss, Nick Espinos, our Senior Vice President of Institutional Advancement, and we were invited to share an update with you all on as a past grantee and one share an update on our upcoming project that we think has some synergy with the port.
Great.
Thank you all for having us today. Can you hear me okay?
We can. You're loud and clear. Go ahead.
Okay. I'm going to see if I can share my screen here. Should get this up here soon.
That's it. Here we go.
Okay.
Great. It's up. Go ahead.
Well, wanted to first say thank you as a past grantee and partner of the port. We are so grateful for the opportunity to present to you today. Pardon? So,
no, he's making a joke. He said he saw one of the commissioners in the one of the four animals that you're showing. Probably me. Go ahead.
So I wanted to say that we started with a strategic plan and a master plan and a business plan back in 2016. And what came out of that was we developed a $150 million capital campaign that is currently led by Dr. Colin Geiselman and Joe Cleary for us. The zoo turns 100 years old this spring on April 30th. It's our official birthday. And so what we wanted to do was launch a series of exhibit openings and guest amenities that we could open in anticipation of our 100-year anniversary. So we have already made great progress by opening our Black Bear Habitat, our Cypress Circle Cafe, the McGovern Texas Wetlands, South America's Pontinal in 2020, a new orangutan renovation in 2021, as well as a new north entry and gift shop. And then the last few projects that we're working on are the Galapagos Islands, an event space at the front of the zoo, and a new bird habitat. But the biggest piece of all of this is the Galapagos Islands. And so I wanted to just walk you through a little bit about what this will look like at the zoo when you first walk in. So when you first walk into the zoo right now, you may not know that you're there.
Nick, I hate to interrupt. Are your slides advancing?
They are.
They're not advancing for us, though.
Okay, I apologize. They are advancing here. And I'm not so familiar with WebEx.
What'd you say, Charles?
You need to be in presentation mode.
You need to be in presentation mode is what our expert IT has to say.
Okay.
There you go.
So you can see that now?
We can.
Yes, we can.
Okay. So this is what the zoo will look like when you first walk in. It will have a new area for sea lions that will have a wave machine. So you'll hear waves crashing and sea lions barking. There will be plenty of areas for the sea lions to haul themselves out onto rocks to sun, as well as areas for them to shade themselves. And then the first thing that you'll see when you enter into the exhibit is a herd of Galapagos tortoises. This will have a lot of topography. So there will be hills and rocks for them to climb over and on and around, as well as giant cactuses in the back to really bring that feeling of the Galapagos Islands to the zoo. And then you'll also see, you may see that very excited young man there with his arms open, greeting that giant tortoise. That will be a heated area, so a heated cave that will draw the tortoises to that area when it's a little bit cooler than we'd like. Directly opposite that, inside, we will have a split view of sea lions where they will have that opportunity to shade themselves, as well as we'll have some views of them underwater as well as above water. You'll continue to descend down through an acrylic tunnel that will give you sea lion views all around you. You'll also continue down, and before you go, we exit, you'll continue down into another gallery that we'll call our One Ocean Gallery that will have sharks and rays and sea turtles, and schooling fish, as well as very colorful coral. And that'll have a 40-foot acrylic panel that will be a viewing panel there. And then before you exit, you'll see Humboldt penguins in a great habitat that will give them space for them to swim and dart around as they normally do. And one of the great things about this exhibit is before you leave the habitat, we have a take action initiative or take action gallery where our guests can take action or pledge to take an action like reducing their single plastic use or increasing their recycling to ultimately save the animals that they just saw in the Galapagos Islands. But what we're trying to say, to tell, is that there is, the key message is that there is one ocean. And our waterways here in Houston impact the waterways down in the Galapagos as well. And so we have launched this campaign back in 2017. We had a $150 million goal, $145 million is for projects, so exactly for bricks and mortar, and then $5 million is being allocated to conservation projects in the regions in which we are building. So in Texas, in Brazil, in Borneo, and in the Galapagos. And the great thing about where we are in this campaign so far is we're almost, we're at the tail end here. This number keeps changing daily. So as of Friday, we had 3.3 million left to raise. I believe as of today, we have closer to 3 million left to raise. So we continue to make good progress on the campaign. But with that, we would love to invite you out to see the project in process. It's a big project. You can see here, it takes up a good chunk of space that used to be administration and administrative parking, but it's now used for exhibits and life support. So we would love to have you out and see the artistry that's going in behind it and the thoughtfulness that goes in behind designing each of these exhibits. And with that, I will stop and see if there are any questions.
Commissioners, any questions? Okay, great project, and congratulations on getting so close to your goal. And I do believe we will that the zoo was part of our community grant program last year?
Yes. Was it last year?
Year before.
Year before,
okay.
Last.
Year before last. Okay, great. Well, thanks. Appreciate your time, and good luck.
Absolutely. Thank
Let's
you.
Let's go ahead. Absolutely. Okay, so let's go to the meat of our agenda of executive. Tom, you're going to give us a...
Yeah,
I'll give you the floor.
In the executive section, I'd like to discuss item F3. It's to authorize an interlocal agreement with Harris County Flood Control District and the City of Houston to support further development of the proposed Galveston Bay Park Plan. If you remember, the commission approved at its September 29, 2020, a $250,000 challenge grant to the Speed Center if they came up with the other $750,000 for this. They have gotten the money from the City of Houston and Harris County, and we understand there is a commitment from a private donor. This is to do an interlocal agreement between Harris County Flood Control District and the City of Houston, along with the Port of Houston, because the money is going to go to the City of Houston and they will distribute it to the Speed Center as appropriate. So I ask the approval of items F1 through F3.
Motion. Second.
Good question. So this does not bind us to any further money.
Nope.
This has been in the $250,000 that we previously committed.
Yeah, this is the final step of that too. They had to come up with the other $750,000. They've now come up with the $750,000.
I have a question.
Yes, go ahead.
Have they come up with pledges or have they come up with the money? We're not going to put our money in until they have a bank account with $750,000 in it.
Well, the city and the county have committed. Just like
committed
we
committed to put the money in.
But the city and then there is a private donor that has committed money. This whole thing goes back to, if we don't see that money, we don't finish it.
As the agreement is drafted, I mean, the city and the county are just as concerned as, you know, the agreement is set up to address what you have stated. And so the way this is going to work, the county is going to probably have it on its next agenda a week from today. And at that point, they'll be committed. And then the city is going to have it on its meeting, this agreement. But then the city is also going to have another agreement with the Speed Center that is going to require that the Speed Center have that money in hand before any of them, the $750,000, gets dispersed. And basically, the way it'll then work is the Speed Center will send a requisition, so to speak, say, here's our quarter of whatever the total was for the services please advance it. So there's a couple of pieces. Both this agreement and the city's agreement have protection.
I guess Chambers County still opposed to this thing, but I thought waste of money, but we are committed. So what can you do with $1 million? Sure can't pay for engineering. We paid 38, 40 million for our engineering. How's he going to do it with $1 million? I think it's a joke, but I guess we're committed.
Scope set up to provide a preliminary engineering. I would say it's more akin to the original feasibility study that was done for Project 11, but it's considerably less than the 5 million plus that the core and 40%.
We'll have an accounting as to how they spend $1 million.
It's absolutely in the agreement. Believe me, I did everything I could to anticipate.
Any other questions? Do we have a second for this?
We did.
You did say it. Great. Okay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Okay. And this was actually approved 1, 2, and 3 under that motion, correct? Okay.
Right.
Good. All right. Business equity. Maxine Buckles, are you going to come up? Hey, Maxine, good to see you. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone.
Morning.
Thank you. Item D1 is requesting approval for an annual software services agreement for our BCG and our diversity management system. We've added additional modules, which makes me go over the $50,000 requiring commission approval, which is why you haven't seen this on the agenda before. So this is just the annual subscription agreement for those software services.
So moved.
Second.
Any questions or comments? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Aye. Commercial. Mr. Mosley.
Good morning. Good morning. Just a little bit of an update. What we're doing here, of course, commercial division to strategically support business operations and create new jobs in the region. Real estate, we're reviewing our current portfolio to ensure our lease to support operations and are at all times market competitive. We're also exploring new opportunities to expand that portfolio to support growth in the future. Economic development, Roger had made a few remarks today about the boom in business. Last month, we attended RELA, the Retail Industry Leaders Association Annual Supply Chain Conference, to meet with beneficial cargo owners interested in using Port Houston as a gateway. There's a lot of interest to change existing supply chains in the country today. And as an example, last month alone, 3 new industrial parks were announced, speculative developments totaling about 900 acres, mainly on the west side of town in Waller County. You had Beacon Hill development project, 500 acres, Empire West, 300 acres, and Grand Parkway, 290, 100 acres. That's all cross-dock import warehouses, sort of sign of the times, things to come in the future. As far as trade development, as the frontline customer-facing group of report, we're out there working with our customers on a daily basis to listen, inform, and educate. In the case of marketing, we're collaborating with all departments across the port to ensure the consistency and effectiveness of our communication and our messaging. We are now preparing new campaigns around sustainability and the environment to support effective two-way communication with our region stakeholders. I've got 3 requests for your consideration this morning. All 3 of them are routine real estate transactions. But I'd like to highlight item H2, a request for a 1-year term with 3 1-year renewal options with Houston Refining. It's essentially a 24.7-acre site in Rosa Allen. I'm Pasadena, where the 225 Rosa Allen meets. It's effective no earlier than April 1st, so just at the end of this month. And it's going to include the Port Authority's advance consent for Houston Refining a sublease in accordance with the terms and permitted use of the lease. It's got an annual base rent of approximately $1 million a year. It is subject to an annual base rent escalation of the greater of 3% or the increase in the CPI upon election of each 1-year extension renewal option. The property is in lease for employee parking, equipment lay down, and plant turnarounds at various times since September 2012. Houston Refining plans to use the property for employee and contractor parking, equipment staging and lay down, plant turnarounds, and storage and handling of general cargo and containers. In December 2021, you did approve a 3-year term lease with Houston Refining. Unfortunately, however, the lease was not signed and did not take effect due to extenuating circumstances surrounding Houston Refining's refinery plant being placed on the market for sale. So we've now agreed to a 1-year term lease with 3 1-year renewal options instead of a 3-year term lease. I'd like to request approval for items H1, H2, and H3.
Second. Go ahead.
Sir, John, let me ask you, I see this number one. We're signing an agreement with Watco,
yes, sir,
who is one of our competing terminals. Are they leasing our land and unloading vessels in their terminal just using our property because there's no space available anywhere?
Sir, this property has been leased since 2018. and it's expiring April 2022. And it's basically, it is a property for Martian Steel. It is a property for Storch Plant, but it's located right here, Industrial Park East. And it does serve City Dock 32.
Yeah, I know where it's at, but what I'm saying is,
it's all our volume.
It's all our volume.
It's all our volume.
Okay, well,
that's, and I truck it in from their facility.
Okay, that's my question.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
It's all our volume right there, City Dock 32.
I'm good, yes, sir.
Okay. Any other questions, comments?
Yes.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
H123 passes. Mr. Finley, you're up.
I'm actually doing. He's out today.
Okay. Good.
So I'm gonna handle the finance.
Go ahead.
Before I get going on the agenda items, I have a presentation. Curtis Duncan, our controller, was gonna be here, but at the last minute he couldn't be here. So he's online as well as some of his staff. I'm proud to announce that the GFOA, Government Finance Officers Association, has awarded the Port of Houston Authority a certificate of achievement for excellence in financial reporting. This is the 47th year in a row we've received this award. So it's very, very positive in terms of how our books are presented, and our community can go online not only to see the CAFR, but also the financials on a monthly basis. So I would like to congratulate Curtis along with his staff, Larry and Marilyn, Patricia, Nessie, Tanya, Magda, Juan, and Paula. So
we're here. Congratulations.
Thank you. So from the agenda item side, I'd like to talk about item I2. Which is to approve a resolution approving a third supplemental resolution establishing the Port of Houston Authority's third lien revenue extendable commercial paper program. This falls in line with what we've been doing since the middle of last year. In July, we came to the commission asking to get approval to start the process of developing teams for financing. Then in September of 21, we actually got a master resolution signed to cover all of the different paperwork. So this is the third supplemental resolution to that. So the first one is the $100 million note purchase agreement we have with Truist. The second one is the $400 million revenue bonds we sold in 2021, and this will be the third one. So again, we don't anticipate releasing any of these commercial paper, but we need it to have the award capabilities as you approve projects, because when the next chunk of P11 comes, it's a very large contract. And so we need to have these established so that we can continue to do our day-to-day business. We don't need the cash, but we need to have the ability to awarded against things like this. So that's why this is a very important piece. Tim and Roland and their groups have done a great job establishing what we need and developing the program to get us to the level to keep us moving forward. So I ask the commission to approve items I-1 and I-2.
So moved. Any other questions?
And I'm going to recuse myself on 2. There's no official conflict, but because I do work in public finance with them, I'm going to recuse myself on that.
One comment that I want to make, that just to not only congratulate the team for their great financial reporting for 47 years, but also their timing on our $400 million bond transaction. If you look at what's happened since the Fed started raising rates, in just the last 8 weeks, interest rates have gone up about 30 basis points, and spreads have widened out at least by 60 to 100 basis points on certain kinds of paper, which means that our rates would be probably 75 basis points higher than they are today, at least on $400 million over a 30-year period. So timing is everything in transactions like this. We definitely wanted to get that financing done before the end of the year, which we did,
and it's definitely going to pay dividends for the next 30 years, especially if we're going to use a deep and wide channel, which will improve our business and everybody else's business along the channel. So great timing, and I want to congratulate our team for getting that done, too. So any other questions or comments? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Next up.
Morning, Rich. Chairman and Commissioners, how is everybody today?
Good.
Great,
good.
Thank you.
Later, I'll make some comments about the sustainability progress in the Community Relations Committee meeting, so I'll defer those for now. We have eight items in the agenda. I'm going to focus on items number one and number two. The first one is hiring two firms to help us with accelerating our master planning and our detailed design for our container terminals. We are recommending to hire AECOM and Moffitt Nickel, and this is really about continuing our investment in the 2040 plan and accelerating the growth. There's a lot of complexities. Every time you look at one part of the property, it's got an implication for another part of the property. For example, dredge material from a wharf has to be placed someplace. We need to understand where the right place to put that is as we sequence development of the undeveloped acreage south of Fort Road and so forth. Both of these companies have agreed and committed to align with our business equity programs, and the nature of this RCA is to put a bit of money available so that we can have an ongoing conversation with these consultants, so that as we discover facets of properties that need to be developed, and then we can make the next decision based on what we learn, we don't have to keep on going back and hiring new consultants. We're going to stick with these two consultants for the master planning and then moving into the detailed design. Both of the firms are already working with us on major aspects of the redevelopment of Barber's Cut and also the capacity planning of Baywood. So these are companies that we know well. They complement each other. And the first task orders were really to be focused on sort of a mini master plan for the east end of Bayport, because that's the next section that we need to build out, as well as geotechnical engineering and updating our sort of cut-fill balance model for where we put dirt, how we develop, how we sequence property development at Bayport and at Barber's Cut. The second item is a two-year services contract for maintenance of the dredge material areas. The interesting piece of this contract is that it includes, you know, the lawn mowing capabilities that we hear so much about from our communities who live in the shadow of the berms of these dredge material areas, and the aspect of the contract is for four annual mowings of the boundary areas with an option for a fifth. And we also have consistency with our business equity program in terms of who they use to subcontract. So with that, I'll answer any questions and ask approval for items 1 through 8.
So moved.
Second. Any questions or comments?
I just had a comment and a question. On the first item, my comment would be, with our diversity efforts, I would like to see us get to the point where we could have a sign that might be in WBE. And question on the second is, why is there such a large disparity between the pricing of the two?
Oh, the two task orders?
Yes.
No, mowing.
Why is it 1.6 million, 1.6?
The first one is the incumbent. They know what the nature of the work is. The second one just kind of didn't understand what the nature of the work that we were asking for was.
So we're going to reach out to the second one and explain the project better so that maybe next time they can do it better.
Okay.
Any other questions? Okay, if not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Great.
I'm going to abstain on 5,000. The two center one.
Which one?
The two center.
Five and five.
Right, absolutely. Please note that. Okay, Jeff. Jeff Davis.
Good morning, Chairman, Commissioners. Let me touch on volumes and the bids that we're doing. Lenders already provided a lot of stats to container and general cargo, so I won't regurgitate those. I will add one technical view, though. Our volumes are up a lot. And certainly evidenced by the number of ships we're doing each day. General cargo ships we're averaging about 20 ships a day. Container terminals continue to average about 6 ships a day. Kevin Thompson is here with us this morning. Doing 30 ships a day requires a lot of efficiency to get the most throughput through our facilities. Thank you to the pilots and your efforts. There's even an item, K-8, that we'll get to in a minute that kind of speaks to some of that. But we're still averaging 10 container ships or about 80% of our revenue, and we're still averaging anywhere from 8 to 12 ships a day. We wait to come up with the container ships and the dual cargo or another 3 to 6 ships as well. So efficiently moving those ships are high on our agenda. Roger mentioned container dwell continues to be the biggest challenge at the container facility, as well as many other items, but 12-day export dwell, meaning every export that comes in averages 12 days before it leaves. That's almost double what it has historically been. And imports at 7.5 days are certainly double. So that's limiting the throughput opportunities of our facilities. I'm going to give you one stat that Roger spoke to. Last month, Barber's Cut grew 30% in loaded containers in 1 month. That's what we buy all the RTGs for. That's what we develop all of the large capital infrastructure land demands for those loads. And grow 30% in 1 month is a lot, again, a lot. But, and it kind of leads to the next piece. We have a piece of business that we could start at Barber's Cut in June, but we're going to have to defer that to later. A really nice piece of business, but we just don't have the capacity to accommodate that. We did start 4 new services this month, not this month, but this year. The fourth one will start next month, but those 4 new services coupled with the existing organic growth, we have deferred that one service, and we're aware of another big service that really wants to come see us in June. So we're aware of all of those things and trying to make adjustments to try to do the things to make that happen. In an effort at Barber's Cut in particular to try to accommodate some of that growth, we had a 5-year lease that had 4 years left that was about 45 acres adjacent, directly connected to Barber's Cut next to the rail ramp. We terminated that lease, or we provided a notice to terminate that lease as well as another lease that's in a similar place, similar situation for about 60 acres between the two of them, that we are going to go take that property back sooner than anticipated, probably be in our possession by September and October. And we'll use it in an interim fashion to try to facilitate growth that we're seeing now, as well as use that planning that Rich just spoke about to develop it for long term. So we'll use it in an interim and develop a phase segment to it. We hadn't planned to get to that property until over 5 years, but this growth has really surged us to where we've had to do some things outside of the norm. So I'm going to move on to the agenda. I'll start with K3, award a contract to Coney Cranes, sole source provider for replacing the Festoon system. Festoons are the cranes moving down, the ship shore cranes are moving down, the cab moves back and forth across the trolley rails. It's that system of cables that bring the electrical and the data to the cab, and the cab follows the container as it moves on and off the ship. And these cranes are, 12 years old, somewhere along that. In that range, 14 and 16, a little greater than 12, so I was close. But a lot of wear and tear on those Festoon systems, and it's time to replace them as a sole source provider. Also, K6, we have a lease between the Port Authority, Port Houston, and Empire. And Empire is located right across the channel there. Long-term tenants to Port Houston, the first arrived in 99. And this is for a 5-year extension of that current agreement. No new rates or anything, that they're still in line with the things that we've done with that lease. I'm going to get better. K7
7 is to enter into a merge reasonable service agreement with Costco Shipping Line. Costco is our fifth largest container carrier at the container facility. And we use this marine terminal services agreement to solidify certain, it provides a great efficiency between us and the ocean carrier with the rates that we provide and the services that we provide. And we've done this with every ocean carrier that has 10,000 containers or loaded containers or more. And this one's been around 10 years. It's a 10-year term, and it's time to renew for an additional 10 years. And K8 is the last one, which is the one that I mentioned a minute ago about the efficiency of the ships coming and going. Our rates call for as soon as the ship arrives at the berth, the dockage or the rate for using the dock commences immediately. And I mentioned that queue of ships is sitting out waiting for the container vessels. Well, as yard capacity, ship cranes, and labor have been a struggle to get ships to turn as efficiently as possible and beat that queue down, those ships have been waiting to come up until a berth is available, all and labor and crane. And so in an effort to maximize the throughput, we're allowing those ships to come up if a berth is available and labor and cranes are not, so they can reduce that. It's typically a 12-hour delay. It can be longer than that. By the time that ship starts up, land, labor's ordered, cranes are put on it, and those kind of things. So we're allowing them to come up early, not start the dockage until they go to work, the day of their work. And it's creating greater efficiency. And, again, the pilots have been really, really good throughout this period, bringing the ships up efficiently. They're getting there when we're expecting them, and this will just help expedite movement of ships through the system. And it's not really, it's not costing us anything because they would have been waiting at the buoy anyway. But with that, there are no questions. I'll ask for approval of K-1 through K-8.
Motion. Second. Any questions?
Good question. So on K-1, I was just curious, and I realize finance is not your section, but on I-2 as well, I-1. So one of those I-1s that excluded, this one says exempt. Was this exempt? I think what I understood was because if there's less than 3 MWBE firms, then we officially write it as exempt.
I'm sorry, Commissioner. Which one was you saying? K-1?
So K-1, the tire repair.
Yeah.
So if there's less, then we'll put it out. I guess this is the CSB. If we don't have at least 3 MWBEs on, then officially, is that marked exempt? Because I know there's exempt under statute, and then there's port rule, right?
And that's one of the examples. And I'm not 100% certain where this one is
okay.
In
that
category. It is. We not only did our list, we went through the City of Houston and Metros as well.
So then on all of these, are we also checking? Do we do that on all as protocol checking City of Houston, Metro, and others?
If we're not, we're going to be.
Okay.
We should be.
Got it.
Typically, though, if they're all ours, they're going to be ours.
Okay.
But we did check that.
Okay. That's good. Okay, got it. Okay.
Have we moved the cranes yet from Bayport to Barge?
They successfully made it.
Yes.
We held our breath hoping this. And if you've ever seen a move by barge before, I don't think any of us have. And they did. And they went very quickly.
It was
they were done by that Friday. They did one a day, and they went very quickly in front of the cold front that was coming and bringing apart wind. So they're successfully there.
Good. And someone had asked me, I had told Mayor and Council's folks that what we were doing, and they had a question, what are we doing? Are we replacing smaller cranes at Barber's Cut? If so, what do we do with those old cranes? Is there a market for them?
Actually, none are being replaced. Yes, they're just being added to the fleet because they're in better shape than some of the cranes that we have demoed at Barber's Cut over the last couple of years. And so they're, what, 15 years old?
Yeah,
15 years old. Yeah, so they're 15 years old. We believe they still have life left in them. And when we moved them over there, the Barber's Cut channel was smaller than the Bayport channel. It still is, but Project 11 will level some of that. So we got more use for it. But as far as having a secondary market for them, transportation is really expensive, and by the time they reach that age, the ones we had in the past, first of all,
we used them until they were dead, those guys. And then
we set them up for scrap. So
they wind up being demoed as scrap.
Okay. Any other questions?
And remember, we're transforming Bait Barber's Cut from 50 gauge to 100 gauge.
Right.
So that's why those would work. Because we finished Dock 3, we needed some new ones, so it was much easier to bring those. And
it fit perfectly, and otherwise, they have a really limited life at Bayport due to the size of the channel and the size of the ships we're hosting there. They can last longer at Barber's Cut the way our model is currently set up, and we'll get at least another decade of use out of it.
Wasn't 40% of the cost of the three new cranes that we got, that we just have it at Bayport, 40% of the cost was transportation?
Hello?
Something like that.
Transportation cost is $2.8 million.
Okay. So what's
it's 40%?
I see. Okay.
A new crane is 12 million.
Okay. So it's not as much, but still $2.9 million.
Okay. Percentage.
All right.
So, Mr. Chairman, I would also publicly like to thank the pilots for what they're doing today under the circumstances. They're really trying to cooperate and be flexible and help everybody. And Robert, we thank you and your folks for that.
Great. Any other questions, comments?
The next hour meeting more often.
Yeah. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Okay, great. I'm going to bring.
I went to Seattle a couple of weeks ago, and the word's out about us, and it was very positive. All the feedback I got. Mm-hmm. A lot of respect out there for what we're doing here. So,
yes,
just wanted to say that. And they can learn a lot from us, I believe. So.
No, let's not teach them because that cargo's coming here.
I didn't. I listened.
There you go. Great. I'm going to bring Rich back up for a minute because one of the things that I want to make sure everybody heard loud and clear was Roger's commitment and our commitment as a commission to be zero carbon by 2050, and that has not, we've never put that stake in the ground until right now, and that would mean then that we have to have interim milestones between now and 2050 to get there. So we're going to talk about this in more detail in the community meeting here in a minute, but I wanted Rich to kind of highlight a little more detail on that.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm guilty of burying the lead, reserving the detail for the next meeting, but this is a major declaration. And the wording is on the last page of the slide set that you've been given. It says Port Houston is committed to a net zero greenhouse gas footprint by 2050 by working on direct and supporting related sources. So we've made declarations before in our environmental leadership strategy to get to 80% and 90% by 2030 and 2040. But this is the first time we're saying we want to focus on getting to 100%. Now, that's going to take a lot of work, and I'll go into how that works in the Community Relations Committee meeting. But if you have any additional questions on that slide right now for the main meeting and the audience that's listening, I can certainly address those.
Commissioners, any questions or comments? I think it's important to have this on the record in the Port Commission meeting. It will be on the record in the community meeting as well. One of the things also that I would like to just mention is that we received a letter from the Environmental Defense Fund on Tuesday, and I don't have most commissioners, I think, got it. And one of the things that I thought was interesting about that letter is they actually congratulated us on our GMEI report, saying it was the best port emissions inventory that they have reviewed, which is saying a lot, right? Because now they have plenty of other issues in that letter that we're going to be addressing over the next year or so. But bottom line is we're on the right track, and I really appreciate your team, Rich, for getting us on that track.
Absolutely, and all those inputs from the Environmental Defense Fund, other advocates, Healthy Ports Coalition, we welcome them. We have an ongoing dialogue with them. And the tone of the conversation has moved to how can we help each other? What kind of skills can they bring? Because they have science and advocacy skills. And how can they advocate in the State House or in Washington, D.C. for policies and funding that can help us achieve some of these goals? So I think the relationship there is
is going to be productive, and we absolutely need to challenge ourselves and challenge them to help us.
That's great. Thanks, Rich. Thanks, Rich. Okay, we don't have any items in people today, but we do have Marcus Woodring. Go ahead, Marcus.
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman. Good morning.
Good morning.
We have three items on the agenda today. I'd like to highlight number one and number three. Number one is for the purchase of 50 UHF radios, ultra-high frequency radios, for the fire department. The ultra-high frequency band better cuts through the hull of a ship, and you can talk to the firefighters more clearly and safely, obviously, when they're down in the hull of a ship. Important about this one is we applied for a grant, for a security grant from FEMA. They're paying 75% of the cost. It's about a $300,000 project. FEMA would pay $225,000, and then we would pay the additional $75,000. Item three, M3, is the renewal of an MOU with the Galveston Fire Department. They do not have fire boats down in Galveston, and 5 years ago we signed an agreement with them that said if they had a major fire down there on board a ship and they requested us, if we were available, we would come. The first 12 hours, as per a normal mutual aid agreement, is free of charge. After that, it's cost plus 20% back to us. So, barring any questions, I ask your approval of M1 through M3.
So moved. Second. Any questions or comments? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Thompson.
It has been a while.
It has been a while. Good to see you. And thanks for the tech help on the presentation this morning.
No problem. We have two items on the agenda, but I wanted to make some quick comments. You know, over the last couple of years, technology absorption has accelerated. You're going to start seeing branding around this concept called next generation. Next generation of how people work, next generation of how the processes that we do, next generation of technology that we do. The two items on the agenda, highlight number one, which was a direct result of our challenges we had last August. And we are doing some studies around how we can become more redundant, more resilient, and how we change those processes to ensure better business continuity and disaster recovery. So with that, I ask for approval of those two items. Oh, by the way, number one is $820,000, 100% MWBE.
The motion, commissioners?
Motion.
Second, okay. Any questions or comments? Redundant and resilient. There you go. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Eric, are you going to read something for us for going to the executive session? Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, we will. But you're going to take, we're going to take a break while we're in it. So go ahead and read it.
It's now 10:17 a.m. The Board of Commissioners for Eastern Authority in Harris County, Texas will now convene a closed meeting. It's submitted by the Texas Public Meetings Act Government Code. Conduct a private consultation with attorneys, including consultations regarding proposed amendments and agreements for legal services with the ABA law firm, SBN Speakers, and Rick regarding real estate, economic development negotiations or incentives, the employment and evaluation of public employees and employees, including deliberation regarding current cost agreement with the Director of the Port Authority and security-related matters. Board Commission will reconvene in public session after the closed meeting is adjourned.
Okay, we're in. So let's go ahead. It is, time is it? 10:35, March 21st. We're back in regular session. Commissioners, is there a motion?
I move to authorize the Port Authority to amend the agreement for legal services with the law firms of ABA and Best and Krieger LLP on the terms discussed in executive session, and to authorize the Chief Legal Officer to do all things necessary to give effect to the foregoing.
Second. Any questions or comments? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
There's another motion, I understand.
Yes. I move that the Port Authority approve a deferred compensation agreement with Roger Gunther on the terms discussed in executive session, and authorize the Chairman and Chief Legal Officer to do any and all things necessary to give effect to the foregoing.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Okay. All right. So we are now, in terms of any commissioners have any questions about any last minute thoughts?
We'll be adjourned.
Okay, so the next meeting is April 26th, so we are adjourned.